Modern Recordist, the podcast where we talk all about designing and living life as an extraordinary artistic visionary, discussing inspiring and creative ideas around making music and art that creates an impact in the world. On this podcast, we hang out with musicians, songwriters, artists, producers, and all manner of artistic visionaries to connect with them and gain insights that provoke our greatest creative breakthroughs. I'm your host, John Stinson, a Nashville-based producer, recording engineer, and mixing engineer, a collector of experiences, a lifelong learner, a lifelong teacher, and an artist in my own right. And I welcome you to another episode of The Modern Recordist. Gentlemen, people of all ages, witches and werewolves and honey badgers, what's up? What's going on? I'll tell you what's going on, people. It's full-on winter here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's frozen. You know, it's completely iced over outside and everything is shut down. It's the coldest time of the year this time of year. I'm sure people up in the Northeast are way, way colder. I've been up in the Northeast in the wintertime, and it's freezing cold up there. But nonetheless, it's full-on wintertime here in North America. And, you know, some of us have it worse than others, but it is the coldest time of the year in Nashville, and January and February things, it's when we really gets, it can get fairly brutal here. So we're in the thick of it, and we're all just trying to stay warm, and that's what it's all about. So trying to stay warm and doing podcasts. So, you know, if you're in somewhere like Australia, or you are in South America or somewhere like that where you are enjoying some warmer weather and it's summertime where you are, go out and live it up, you know, and hit the beach and think of me and maybe catch some waves for me. So on this episode of the podcast, I am experimenting with something new, which is to start bringing on folks as regulars to the podcast. More on that in just a minute, because right now I want to take a second to make sure that you get subscribed and stay subscribed to The Modern Recordist. And you can do that on iTunes or Stitcher. So fire up your podcast app of choice, search for The Modern Recordist, and click or tap the subscribe button that you will find there. And while there, make sure that you take a quick second to leave a rating and review. Good and honest ratings and reviews clue other people into the value that you're getting out of listening to this podcast. And it also helps us to communicate to potential guests why it would be worth their time to be on this podcast. And it also helps us to gauge whether or not we're producing content that you're getting something out of and that you find the guests insightful and inspiring and that you're enjoying the show. So open up your podcast app of choice, search for The Modern Recordist, and click or tap the subscribe button and take a quick second to leave a rating and review. It literally doesn't require any time on your part, but it goes a really long way to help this podcast. And if you want to make sure that you are really in the loop, then head over to modernrecordist.com and put your email address into any of the forms that you will find all over the site. And this way we can keep you up on all the latest and greatest that has to do with the modern recordist, and this includes things like key episodes with particularly insightful guests that you don't want to miss, as well as further discussions on recording techniques and mixing tips and creativity and songwriting, things like this. It also will give you the heads up on any special resources that we will be putting out, things like ebooks and live workshops, live events, and online courses and things like that. So you'll get the heads up on all that stuff as well. So make sure you go over to modernrecordist.com and put your email into any of the forms that you will find all over the site for all of that stuff. Okay, so like I said, I'm going to start bringing on some folks as regulars to the podcast because I think that that would be a fun element to introduce to this show. You know, so far I think that the only repeat guest that's been on the show has been Paul Sykes, because I've actually, up until now, I've worked to avoid having repeat guests on the show because I wanted to keep the focus on a wide variety of people, and I wanted to have just variety, you know, and I was afraid that having too many repeat guests on too often would kind of get things a little bit stagnant. But now, you know, the show's been around long enough that we could have somewhat of a revolving door of regulars sprinkled about, and I don't think that that would be boring. I actually think that would be quite the opposite. So the guest today is somebody that I had on about 2 months ago, and I really enjoy talking with him, and I really enjoy the discussions that we have on creativity and where that goes, you know, and the insights that we bring out in each other. And this time we get into a discussion about what it takes to have consistency in your creative output, and particular tricks and habits and practices that you can use to help yourself get psychologically geared up to be in the creative zone and mitigate procrastination. And we also talk about how doing creative work is a lot like war, and that it all really boils down to the fact that you're really just in a battle with yourself. So listen up for the story of the war bandana. But now, my fellow artistic intellectuals and sonic savants, please enjoy this episode of The Modern Recordist and this podcast hangout with my pal, Tim Zimmerman. Like I said, I'm trying this, I want to have more established, more regulars on the show, and so I think that, you know, because the conversations that you and I have on a nearly weekly basis are, you know, we go cool in some cool places, and like, you know, we're meeting and hanging out and kind of just doing what we do to sort of support one another in terms of just having sort of more or less it's accountability, but
yeah,
but also,
that's a good way to put it. People talk about that, like when they're, you know, like working out or like, you know, stuff like that. Like they have somebody, you know, an accountability partner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, you know, through all that, and then like we end up going, you know, talking about a lot of stuff that ends up being, it's just, you know, kind of on the surface seems like non-focused random talk, but when you really but honestly though, it's not.
Yeah.
It's like it serves the purpose of just kind of feeding and igniting the creative mind. You know, I always walk away
totally.
from those conversations that we have, just sort of there's some sort of kind of inspirational creative sort of breakthrough or insight that I walk away from.
Oh, yeah.
And oftentimes I'm going, man, it'd be nice just to like we should have recorded that, you know. So we've said that a few times, and so, you know, I was just thinking, well, maybe we should just do that. You
yeah,
know what
dude.
I mean? So this is a good opportunity
totally.
To kind of play around with that idea of, you know, establishing more regulars on the show, which is not something that I've done a lot of.
Well, I'm glad to kind of help pilot that.
Yeah, man, for sure. So we can see what we can get into today.
Right on, man.
I did a little bit of you know, I had some sort of some jumping off points and things that we could talk about.
Sure.
And, you know, however structured or unstructured this ends up being, I don't know. I came up with some stuff and maybe we can, you know, just experiment with some kind of, direction that I had, what I was thinking about in my mind, but it, you know, whatever.
Yeah, dude,
it'll be whatever it is. So
see where we go.
Yeah. So cool, man. Here we are on this, today. It's a snowy, very snowy day in Nashville.
Oh yeah.
Hanging out.
This is actually some decent snow. I mean, I as I've told you before, I'm from near Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So snow for us up there is quite a bit different than snow down here.
Right.
You know, so like as I'm driving over, I'm like, oh, this is pretty easy. 'Cause you know, up there, like we got 2 feet of snow. It's like, I still got to go to work, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just different. 'Cause up there that it, you know, it's much colder and snowier.
Tell me about it.
But it's still fun. I mean, it's nice to look out and look out the window and see it.
I wouldn't want to live up in the Northeast, it's, you know, through a winter. I definitely would not want to do that. I've been there before. Uh-huh. And
yeah, you were talking about it before.
Yeah, and yeah, I've mentioned that. And it's just, I've experienced Philadelphia in January, and it's just like,
it's
dude,
rough, man. It's,
yeah,
it's
I don't rough. Know why anybody. Yeah, I'm just like, dude, this is just, I don't ever want to come back.
Well, there's a common stereotype too that like, you know, people from the North are angry all the time. Like,
yeah,
particularly the Northeast. Like,
yeah.
You know, New Yorkers, people from Philadelphia, you know, that they're all angry and rude and
yeah.
And while that is definitely true sometimes, I believe it is mostly because of the cold. Because
yeah.
You know, when it's cold, like all you want to do is get to where you're getting to. You don't really want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
You just, especially when it's every day. Like down here, like I noticed like there are some people at my apartment kind of like, you know, enjoying the snow and stuff.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah.
But when it's every day up there, it's just like,
yeah, well,
I need to get to where I'm going.
And plus here, which is just kind of insane to me. But like you were saying, like here on a day like today, like everybody just, know, you know, people don't work. School is out. It's like, it's just a free day.
Everything
you just get a day
down.
Off, you know. Whereas up there, it's like,
it's a normal day.
Yeah,
I mean, we have these, like, it's really weird, like, when you're on the highway, they almost kind of look like pyramids, sort of.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're these weird-looking conical buildings.
Yeah.
That are all fenced in and stuff. There'd be, like, three of them. It's like a much smaller version of the Great Pyramids of Giza. And when
okay.
I was a little kid, I had no idea what they were. So I finally asked my dad, what are these pyramid things? And he said, there's salt in there. And I was like, salt? What are you talking? There's just a giant pile of rock salt inside
yeah.
of these pyramids that they fill these trucks up, and then the trucks are always going.
Yeah,
plows are going, and
yeah.
you know, it's fun when you're.
Yeah,
a kid,
they have
know?
A whole system which
exactly.
they don't really have here.
No.
They don't spend the money
right
because
it just doesn't happen often.
It
enough.
Didn't happen often enough to spend the money on a thing like that.
Right.
But up there, like I mean, a winter lasts like it lasts like it's going to snow up until through March.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
It really kind of it. Sometimes it'll start as early as November, you know,
yeah.
And then it will go basically till March in April even. I mean, I remember there was a snowstorm in May one time.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly one of the biggest snowstorms I ever saw was in April. And it's just, they call them a nor'easter.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
A snowstorm in May. I can't even see. That's why it's just like, I know it's just like, that's no place for me to live.
Yeah.
You know? I want to
but
maximize my summer months.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Totally. That's why
I have
I
a
like
dream to
here.
Like, I have a dream to, at some point kind of design my life to where I can just sort of chase the summer.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
Like, so I can just go to the Southern Hemisphere, during the what would be the northern the I mean the winter months here, I can just, you know, go to the Southern
That's
Hemisphere.
The dream,
and
man.
Always be summer, or maybe, you know, you don't even have to. You can go because last December I was down in Key West. So I mean, all you really only you don't have you could just go down there.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
totally cool. I mean, you're like hanging out like it's summertime, and that's even far enough south that it also impacts the length of the day, because that's another thing that really bugs
me.
Yeah,
like, the shortness of
the day. So, I mean, you can go down to like Key West and you can notice a difference.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's far enough south that it's like, oh, it's like the days are longer here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they get pretty short. Up in Pennsylvania, and I mean, like, it's cool the first snowstorm, and you get the day off and stuff. But then after a while, it turns into this gray, slushy mess as well.
Yeah,
you know, and it just after a while, the novelty of it wears off, and
right.
It just becomes like really just a big annoyance.
Oh, it's I just think it's difficult. It's so much more tedious. There's just wetness. And
the salt gets all over everything. It eats through the paint in your car.
You got to layer up all the clothing.
I hate that.
So, that's just not my style, man.
Yeah, me
it's
neither.
So, anyway.
But this is nice today, you know, because it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah,
so.
You know, and I was thinking that earlier this morning is like, you know, I only get to experience this once or twice a year.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to enjoy it. It's fine.
Yep,
whatever.
Yep. Snow day.
And we can just do a podcast, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So whatever. We don't have to worry about it. We just lock ourselves away here and do a podcast.
Yeah,
and
dude.
Make the most of it. So cool, man. So yeah, you're here wearing your the war bandana.
So the war bandana. Yeah.
And you talked to me about this the other day on Friday when we got together for coffee and we're hanging out. You mentioned the war bandana, and that's great because I was going to actually bring it up. I wanted to – some of the stuff that you and I have talked about.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring back up and kind of talk about it on the mic. But, yeah, explain the war bandana.
Well, okay. So in the last few months, I've really started working really hard on the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, other projects that I have, like the cover band, the play dates. And then Sean, who came on the podcast not too long ago, Sean Sunderland is producing some songs of mine. And then I've got some programs at work that I'm piloting. So, you know, it's not just that things are busy. It's that, like, I have to really focus on the work that I'm doing. And sometimes, you know, when you're working really hard on something, it gets lonely. You lose focus. You start worrying about stupid things that mm-hmm. don't pertain to the work. You start thinking about, you know, I'm not really hanging out with a lot of people. I'm kind of shut in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's what I've noticed is that to make art and to create something that's you know, really of value, you have to make some sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really have to kind of you have to sort of shut yourself in and focus, and there's a lot of distractions, you know. That you really can't worry about as you're working on this stuff. Like, it's hard to have a life,
yeah,
and go to some of those places. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's hard to have a life and at the same time go so deep into your own mind that you can come out with something tangible that you've mm-hmm. created. So it gets, you know, it can get depressing, you can get sad and stuff, and then when you lose focus, you're like, oh, maybe I should go to a bar and hang out with some people. But then you do that and you realize I wasted this day,
mm-hmm.
you know? So what I thought of, like, it's, you know, I was in the Army for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Army band, you know, I didn't actually go to combat, but you know, I played for thousands of soldiers that did, you know, I trained to fight, you know, I did all that stuff. I went to basic training. And something that I realized is that when you're doing something like that, right? Like when you're building something, when you're going to a country and when you're at war, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't have time to think about any of that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have an objective.
Yeah.
And the objective is to, you know, I guess, you know, like defeat the enemy. So you have to gain territory. You have to, you know, establish forward operating bases. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to do all that stuff. And any time that you spend outside of that is time that you have wasted And it's time that you're not in a state of victory.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what I kind of realize is I'm doing this graphic novel and stuff because I'm literally trying to change my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to change my life from what it is now to what I want it to be. And so in that way, I almost have to kind of forego, you know, like trying to be happy, trying to be, to you know, find people to hang out with, trying to find someone to spend my life with or whatever. All that stuff has to be put on the back burner right mm-hmm. now so that I can build this thing that I'm trying to build, so that I can, you know, take over this country or whatever, you know, like all yeah. that stuff in my mind. So I saw, you know, one of my favorite movies is Platoon.
Uh-huh.
I love Platoon because I think that it's not just about war. It's about the human soul, you know? It's
yeah.
the duality of man. It's a guy, you know, being torn in two directions. And ultimately, you know, he just has to hunker down, get in his foxhole and fight.
Mm-hmm.
And he wears this red bandana. So I took this bandana that I found at my mom's house, and I started wearing it when I work, which, you know, like we talked about, like it might not seem like a big deal. It's like, oh, it's a bandana, big deal. But it does something to my, you know, to my psyche. I also am growing out my beard right now
uh-huh.
for the moment. Like I won't shave, you know, and stuff like that because, yeah. you know, I look at myself in the mirror. And instead of like, there's this fight that happens in my mind. Like, look at myself in the mirror. Oh, you're lonely. You don't have a girlfriend. You don't have friends. You know, you're miserable and this, that, blah, 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 all this nonsense, you know. But then I look in the mirror and say, no, I am at war. This is war.
Yeah.
Right now. I am in a battle to change my life and turn it into something that I, you know, get to the place that I want to be. War takes time, you know,
yeah.
it takes a lot of effort. It takes sacrifice, you know, it takes risk. Mm-hmm. All of those things are the things that you must do in order to achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
Especially in a creative environment, because, you know, every moment is a moment that you decide, am I going to work on this or am I going to do something that doesn't achieve my objective?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it does something to my mind. It kind of hacks my brain.
Sure.
And makes me, okay, war bandana's on. When the war bandana's on, we're at war. You know, we are in a state of combat.
Yeah.
And it suddenly changes the way I focus on things.
Yeah.
It's like if you have this tangible item, right? You have this thing that... you know, that you sort of assign this enchantment to, almost, for all you Skyrim fans out there, you know, it makes you, you know, it does something to your brain. I mean, I
right.
I really believe that.
Oh, I think that there's not any scientific evidence that I can directly reference, but I've heard enough people who are high achievers, who are people that are thought leaders that I follow, mm-hmm. talk about this tactic basically. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that it is scientifically researched. It's just nothing that I can pull out right now. Now I've tried similar things myself, like, and I haven't, tried it for the creative mindset, you know, what you're talking about. Well, where I have had luck with this, and I want to, actually, I was thinking about this morning as I was preparing for us to talk, and I was thinking about your war bandana. I was like, I need my own, whatever it's going to be, my own
yeah.
version of that for when I'm going to be in creator mode to put
yep.
my mind there. But now I've used this tactic for working out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a similar yeah. thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard about other people doing that where you basically you lay out, you have your like workout uniform and it's
yeah.
and it's like the same exact outfit or same exact clothes
yep.
every time. You lay that out the night before, and so you don't need to, all you have to do is make an agreement with yourself the night before.
Right.
All I'm going to do is just get out of bed and put on that uniform. That's all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then the rest ends up kind of taking care of itself.
It
but
really
you
does,
make the
man.
Agreement with yourself that, like, here's what you've committed to. You've committed to getting out of bed at this time and putting on the uniform. Now, if after you do that, you don't want to do anything else, fine.
But
the agreement with yourself is to put on the uniform.
Exactly.
And usually that's all that needs to happen to cajole
you to the next thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like when I was in basic and stuff, you know, and in the Army band, you know, most of our job is playing music. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We rehearse and we do performances. You know, I had a rock band that I was in, so yeah. We used to play for community events and soldiers at Fort Dix going over, and you know, at the height of the Iraq war, everybody that was going to war and coming home from war, I was playing for.
Uh-huh.
We were doing just rock and roll, like classic rock and roll, change of command ceremonies, graduations.
That's all important stuff.
Yeah,
that's important.
I mean, the
stuff
Army
for
runs
morale,
on that stuff.
You know, morale. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, one thing that they're very, very clear about is that every soldier is infantry. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're not 11 Bravo, you know, even if you're not actually in infantry, you know, they're like, you know, every soldier carries a rifle. Every soldier, is trained to fight. So we did a lot of training and stuff. I was the sergeant for the nuclear biological chemical masks and stuff. That was like my job, was I had to maintain that stuff.
Okay.
But you wear your uniform, you know, you have, obviously, soldiers wear a uniform, but it's not just the uniform that you wear. You also have, kind of your, they call it the full battle rattle, you know?
Okay.
So it's like this vest kind of thing that has all these pockets and everything.
Yeah.
You have your Kevlar helmet, your LBE, your load bearing equipment, you know, you have your weapon, you know, all these things that when you have these things on, you only wear them when you're going to do this stuff. You only wear them if you're going to do something military related.
Right.
You know? It's like when you put it on, you know, you suddenly almost feel like, okay, I have transformed from, you know, I'm a regular, normal person. I am now a soldier.
Yeah.
You know? So like, I mean, again, I never went to fight, and I didn't stay in the military, but there's something about putting on that uniform that changes your brain.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, some people, like, you know, I told my mom about this or somebody like that, and they're like, well, you know, creativity, it shouldn't be so violent sounding. And I'm like, look, you know, if you're working on something like this, it is violent in a way.
Yeah, and everybody's going to have their own experience. This is your experience of your life of a creator. That's your experience of it, and it's completely valid. And so, you know, somebody like your mom or whoever it was, that might not be their experience of it, and that might not be the thing that like just the process or mindset that they need to have that speaks to them. You know, that might just not be the thing that speaks to them to put them in that place of creation.
Right.
But it does for you. And also, I do want to point out that everything, I haven't brought this book up in a while, but for the first like year of this podcast, I talked about it all the time. But the book, The War of Art. I mean, it's
right.
You are, and so Steve, I don't know if you've read that.
I haven't. I need to read that. You brought that up before.
Yeah, I recommend that. Stephen Pressfield, because it's, I mean, totally, man. The analogy of being being a creator and creating works of art, it's such a direct, I mean, I've never been in war, but you know, it's just that conflict, because what's happening is, you know, the idea of, you know, I do practice jiu-jitsu, and so, you know, there's you're kind of basically in combat, right?
Yep.
It's like simulated hand-to-hand combat essentially, and you're sparring every week, and there's so many life lessons that went after you train jiu-jitsu for long enough time. You start to learn about yourself in ways beyond just being on the mat and learning these, you know, these self-defense techniques or whatever. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned since practicing jiu-jitsu and really kind of you know, I think I've heard people say this, but really it internalized in me. I really resonated with it, is this idea that you're in a battle with yourself and your entire right. life, you're only in a battle with yourself. And that's the kind of the end all be all. It's like, no matter what situation you're in, no matter what conflict you're in, the common denominator is always you,
right?
Right? And your mindset and how you interpret each situation that you're in is of paramount importance.
Right.
And so it's going to be really the core essence of all of life is really that you're in a battle with yourself,
pretty
you know,
much.
And there's some real external circumstances in certain situations and all this kind of stuff. That stuff is real. But at the end of the day, what is always real, no matter what, is that you're present in each one of those situations and that you are in a battle with, you know, coming like on the jiu-jitsu mat, whether I might have every single time, right? I'm battling an opponent.
Right.
But paramount, the core defining moment or circumstance of whether or not I will get submitted or I'll come out victorious is me. Like
right.
how I'm dealing with myself in those moments.
Totally.
You know,
absolutely.
In each one of those moments. And so it can seem really real that, okay, there's this 300-pound dude on top of me. He's got me inside control. He's putting on pressure really hard. You know, I can barely breathe, you know, and there's this part of your brain that's screaming, tap out right now because, you know, you're done.
Your survival instinct
yeah,
is
kicking
in.
And you know that if you tap, it'll be over, and you feel like you're going to die and all this. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, You can either push through that and figure out, try to push through that into this place of like, so tapping out is a given. I know that I can do that and it will be over, but what other options do I have
right
now? You know, so I'm kind of in a battle with myself because the whole time I'm going, there's this part of your brain that's just going, just tap out, just give up.
Yep.
Right. And it can be the same thing. Like the war of art is talking about your internal resistance.
And there's a lot when you're creating art too,
yeah.
because you know, like I said, like you're not necessarily, you know, going out doing social things and all that stuff because you're building something,
yeah.
You know, and it's for me, it's like, you know, the idea of being at war, you know, when you're at war, all you're focused on is war,
mm-hmm.
the war that you're in,
yeah.
You know, you're not distracted necessarily by external things. You know, it's like you have to fight to win, and there is an end point to it as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, the biggest thing is that, like, you know, in Platoon, Charlie Sheen, he's doing his 1-year tour of duty.
Yeah.
So I look at this like, you know, there is an end point here. You know, when
yeah.
this thing is done, you know, then I, you know, I feel like it's like I can go home.
Yeah.
Until I go back, you
right.
know, and every time I put that bandana on, I'm going back. It's like I'm flying back and forth between those two things. When the bandana's not on, you know, all right, fine. I'll, you know,
yeah.
do, you know, stuff that doesn't influence, you know, that's not part of
yeah.
the creative process and stuff. But when the bandana's
yeah.
on, it's like we're in the foxhole.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, it's been helpful for me on a lot of this kind of stuff to think about my life as a movie, you know? And so
mm-hmm.
you can think about your life as like, because you're referencing Platoon. So you can think about your life. And so you can be the hero of your movie. That's something that I've heard Joe Rogan talk about. Like, be the hero of your own movie. Think of your life as
oh,
a movie
yeah.
and you're
totally.
The hero. What would the hero do? Right. And so you're referencing, Platoon, but you know, and things that when it comes to sort of like the warrior's mentality and battle and war and all that kind of stuff, the type of stuff that like if I was gonna be that hero guy, that hero warrior, the type of themes that really speak to me are maybe more like ancient Rome or like, you know,
like the Legion. See, for me, it's like
yeah.
Vietnam. And,
yeah, okay,
and,
yeah,
and
sure,
like
and that's
World
totally
War II and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But be that as it may, it's like when you think about, you know, your life that way. And so these movies, not every scene is a battle, right? Some there's scenes where like the hero is like, you know, off in the camp somewhere and they're
right.
having a gathering around the campfire and just, you know, camaraderie. And then maybe they're like, he's going to back to talk to the king to do some strategy or whatever.
Right.
And then there's scenes where like, you know, like Braveheart, you know what I mean? Then there's scenes where they're going to pick up the sword and shield, right. And in that moment they're going to put their war paint on.
And that's what they do.
Yeah.
And that moment, that's when they put the war paint on. Yeah. That's when they put the I think it's called woad.
Uh-huh.
It's like this blue pigment that they had.
Yeah.
And yeah, when they put that on, and those guys, I don't know if you know this, but those dudes a lot of the time used to fight completely stark naked.
Yeah.
I mean, they would literally, that's how, you know, that's how little they cared.
Yeah,
you know?
I've heard about that kind of stuff. Different cultures would do that, and there's reasons for that. Do you know, like, there's a reason for it.
Well,
right?
The more stuff you're wearing, the more it encumbers you.
Yeah.
So even though armor protects you, there's an exchange for that, because the more armor you have, the less you're able to move.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was also an intimidation tactic.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see a guy with a spear or a club or bludgeon or some sort, whatever, running at you, you know, just full stark naked.
Yeah.
This is a guy who gives no concern for his own safety.
Yeah.
So he is going, you know,
he's got a one up on you.
Yeah.
Man.
You may wind up killing him, but he's going to bite your face off.
Yeah.
Or he's going to fight
with
a ferocity.
He's invested on a level that you're not invested. It's full on 100% offense.
Right.
He's not going to think any.
Exactly.
You know.
So it's an intimidation tactic in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, similar to how, you know, the Persian army, you know, would have war elephants and stuff like that. Or, you know, I mean, and the Roman legions, you know, just these massive columns.
Yeah.
You know, trying to break the spirit of your enemy. So, yeah, I mean, like, that's what those guys would do. They didn't, you know, they're no armor, nothing. They just charging at you, full flailing in the breeze.
Yeah, totally. Know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny, man. There was actually, you know, in self-defense, you know, and I'm always geeking out on YouTube on, like, different self-defense videos. And I don't know if this was real or not, whether it was, like, just sort of a prank and it was a put on. But there was this experiment video. This was, like, 2 or 3 years ago that I came across this video where these guys were like, all right, we're going to do a self-defense experiment. So what they did was, like, somehow they set something up where there ended up being like a conflict, and there was a guy that was like challenging them to fight. And the guy goes, okay. And he just like rips his pants off and he's naked and he goes, let's go. And the guy that was like, you know, trying to fight him was like, runs off.
It's like, I ain't
messing
with that.
They're like, forget about all your, you know, kung fu and all this stuff. This trumps everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Until it doesn't, but it's just funny to think about, you know. And I was even talking to an old jiu-jitsu instructor that I had, a friend of mine, and telling him about this one conflict. One time I was down at a bar somewhere that I don't hang at this place anymore, because it's just always just people are aggressive, you know. And it's just like, I'm a pacifist, man.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, now, especially now that I train in self-defense and martial arts and stuff, any kind of conflict comes
right.
up, it's almost like now I'm way more terrified after learning self-defense than I was before, because it takes away. Now you're completely exposed to all the real, like, the threats and the circumstances and how
very, you know, like, all the possible outcomes.
Yeah. And you know, you've been put through, I don't know, you got an education and like, you don't have any false notions of a lot of people that when they don't understand, when you're not exposed to like the very real nature of how things can go wrong.
Yeah.
You're too ignorant to be afraid of a situation, and you don't respect a thing, you know,
right.
Like when you spar with a person, when you have enough experiences where you spar with a guy and you size him up ahead of time and then you get owned. That happens 2 or 3 times. You realize, okay, I need to stop making these preconceived judgments
right.
about people
yeah.
just based on what I think of them by looking at them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, totally. And
so,
that's good for anybody.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I'm down at this place, and this guy's being a jerk and everything, and I end up kind of like defusing and just like talking it down. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, man, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I hope that this doesn't go...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
totally.
Go there, because I don't honestly know what is going to happen. Like, you know,
People are unpredictable.
I could get knocked out. I could get, who knows what could happen. You know, like a black belt can get knocked out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So anyway, I talked him down. And then I was telling my jiu-jitsu instructor about it a few days later. And he was like, that happened. All you got to do, man, is just reach down his pants and grab his junk. That's it. It ends the whole thing. And you're like, really? So I'm a black belt now? Is that what's up? You know?
That's your initiation.
Yeah. But anyway, there's something real to that. You know what I mean? Like, just that playing, it's all a mind game.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Even war, you know? It's like, if you can psych people out, if you can psych out a whole nother nation or whatever, you know?
That's been, you know, like that's one of the things they taught us, you know, like, because like I said, it was during the height of the Iraq War. I mean, I enlisted in 2004 and we had invaded Iraq in 2003.
Yeah.
So, you know, the time that I was serving in was a very volatile time, you know, and one of the things that we did in basic training was we had to do, like, we had to go to a fictional town.
Yeah,
and there all these crazy things happened, you know, and it was crazy, like, because it wasn't just about like find the enemy and kill him. It was like, you know, these are real people,
yeah,
you know, that we may have to deal with in the future, and that we may have to learn to work with,
right?
You know, so I mean. All of that stuff is definitely mental. I mean, you know, when you think about all the stuff that humanity has done in its short couple hundred thousand year existence, you know, the human mind is simultaneously the most beautiful and also most dangerous thing to ever exist.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's no other, you know, there's no other species that we know of that actually makes war upon each other, you know?
Yeah.
Like that fights each other in the way that we do.
Yeah, you know? No, I guess, not in the exact same way, but there's definitely, you know, from what I understand, there are like tribes of monkeys I guess chimpanzees or something.
There's baboons
and stuff.
That stuff is crazy.
There are some similarities there, you know, but I mean, it's nothing like it's certainly not like war as humanity engages on itself. But, you know, so to bring it to a place that, you know, to bring it to context here. Yeah, it's a psychology game, man. So the war bandana is your kind of totem, as you will.
That's a good way to put
it. Trigger you into that psychological space to be able to do battle against, because you've got to be in the zone to make time to create output, and, you know, and there's all these forces, you know, external forces, like people may call you, hey, you know, we need you to work, or can you be here? Can you do this appointment? Can you,
right,
whatever. There's all that stuff. There is your own procrastination. There's your lack of focus.
And also the need for socialization as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, going out and hanging out with people and stuff, you know, it's like, you know, you're looking at yourself in the mirror. Without the war bandana, you're like, oh, look at you. You're lame. You don't have any friends. You're lonely all the time. But you put that war bandana, so I'm like, no, to hell with that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm at war.
Right.
I can't do any of that stuff right now.
Right.
You know, because I'm building something.
Right.
I'm fighting for something.
And it takes a real, you know, a lot of people, you know, everybody struggles with this. Every creator struggles with it, you know, just protecting their time to focus in and devote and create space. You have to create the space,
right?
You know, to make a work, and it has to be a daily practice, and, you know, it has to be something that you're going to put first priority for the amount of time that it takes for it to be the first priority,
right?
You know?
Because otherwise, you know, it's never going to come to fruition.
Yeah,
you know?
Or say a better way, you have to put it first priority for the amount of time that it takes to bring it to fruition.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And so yeah, I mean, we need to play psychological games with ourselves, because otherwise we're going to defeat ourselves, you know, exactly. And this is a really big,
it's dangerous, man.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. You're your own worst enemy with that kind of stuff. And there's so many excuses too.
Right.
You know, like that. And I, you know, as a teacher, you know, I have conversations with students that, you know, have all manner of reasons not to practice.
Right. Yeah, there's results or there's excuses, right? And
exactly.
And that's just it. It's at the end of the day, right? So this has helped you. How long have you been doing that method?
Couple months now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I went to my mom's house, and she uses them as napkins. She has like, it's interesting. She's pretty cool. She like has a bunch of like bandanas that she uses as napkins. And me and my siblings, we got pretty hammered one night.
Uh-huh.
We had some Japanese whiskey. We had some really fantastic bourbon.
Yeah.
From New York, where my brother lives. And we were playing Mario Kart. And I don't know, at some point he tied it around his head.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm taking this. And I took it from him.
It was just sort of an epiphany. That moment was an epiphany. Like,
and then I looked at myself in the mirror and I saw Charlie Sheen from Platoon. And I was just like...
It all clicked.
It all made sense.
That's great, man, because it concocts a story that can get you excited, and it's something that you can
it's a totem,
hang
like
on
you said.
To. Yeah, it's something you can hang on to really catalyze, cajole you or whatever into the mindset that you need to have.
Sure. And with what I'm doing, you know, like I'm right now, I am working on the speech bubbles, the text bubbles for the graphic novel.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. And not to interrupt, but just to, because you've been, this is your big project. This is your main focus, the thing that you've been working on for a while. And it's currently your passion project. You were saying that your why is to kind of be able to redesign your life to where you want it to be.
Right.
And which I'd like to dive into that a little bit more too, but, you know, because you were on, like, it's like a couple of months ago when we talked about what you're creating. You're creating this right now graphic novel and all, but I don't want to necessarily rehash everything, but why don't you talk about kind of what the project is that you're working on right now? Because there's a considerable amount of people listening to this episode that didn't hear the first episode you and I did. Yeah.
So over the last 10 years, I created a rock opera. And you know, not just a rock opera, but I mean like a fictional universe based around this character called the Interstellar Healer. And he's a healer made of stardust, that is the most powerful being in the universe. But he has a black hole where his heart should be. And he does not remember why he started healing in the first place or where that black hole came from. It started as just a song, and now it's a full rock opera. But
so that was originally it was just a single song.
It was just a single song.
So you
that
come
I
up
wrote.
With this idea, basically that idea of the Interstellar Healer and that character, and kind of a little bit of his story.
Yep.
And you wrote a song about it.
Yep.
And then that continued to sort of that idea and that theme just continued to kind of like.
Yeah, it just
open up in your mind into more and more and more.
I wrote some other story songs that at first weren't connected, but then I realized I could use them.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, and they kind of made sense for the healer's backstory and kind of where he came from. And, you know, at the behest of my band members at the time, you know, they were like, let's do this. So the original idea is to do a fully staged rock opera, which is still the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
The ultimate goal is to perform this live, but then
as like a theatrical on
correct,
stage
like a Broadway style production.
Yeah.
But then, you know, what you and I talked about was, you know, I need something in the meantime that doesn't cost $1 million that I can begin to, you know, bring the story to the public. So what I'm now working on is I took one song, the main song, the Interstellar Healer, the first song that the whole thing started with. And I'm creating a graphic novel, an online graphic novel that has interactivity and that is also that is synced to music. So it's a musical graphic novel that chronicles the story of the Interstellar Healer. And so right now what I'm working on is I've got a fantastic artist in Argentina who is working on the pages. What I'm working on right now is I'm creating like speech bubbles to go with the story. So it's like, you know, the dialogue and everything. You know, the goal is that in 4 months, give or take, that this graphic novel will be finished. And it will be like an HTML5 style thing that you know you can view on your iPhone, you can view it on your computer. So it'll be cross-platform. It will be free to the public, and you know the idea then is to get the story out there.
Yeah.
So that if you know if this thing floats, you know, if it winds up being something that people like, then we'll do more of them, and we'll perform it, you know, at venues in Nashville. We'll perform it with projectors that have stills of the story, from the graphic novel itself. I will portray the character of the Interstellar Healer, in full costume. And the goal is that eventually, you know, we'll finish all of these and be able to perform the entire thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully, we'll have, you know, enough of a fan base that, you know, we're able to produce that stuff.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal. And that's kind of what, you know, that's my objective with it.
Cool.
You know, 'cause you get to a point in your artistic life, you know, when you're 19 and you're playing in bands and you're, you know, just going crazy and partying all the time, that's fine. But you get to a point where you're eventually like, okay, I don't want to, you know, go get a quote-unquote real job so that I can have a family and a house and all the things I want. I want to do this with the work that I'm creating. So that's kind of what the goal is.
Right. Killer, man.
So, that's what I'm working on right now. Yeah. As the pages come in, I am designing the text bubbles and stuff like that. I just got back a page, a color page, which is pretty slick.
Yeah. So what is it like? You know, and you're saying that what you're currently working on right now, you're designing the speech bubbles, text bubbles, and stuff like that. But what's this project looking like? How are you structuring it? How are you creating and doing this adaptation from a theatrical version of it to like a graphic novel version of it? How are you doing that? You're working with someone.
So I use Microsoft Publisher. I've been using FL Studio for the last like 12 years, and I don't use all of its functionality, but it works perfectly for me what I need. So I just make kind of an outline. And then I send it to him, and then he sends me.
So, like, you hired like a graphic designer to do all this.
Yep. Yeah. He's an illustrator, and he specializes in comic book work. I sent him the character designs, and then he sent them back to me.
Yeah.
I have some, inspirations for characters. You know, like this is a picture of this person, so make it look similar to that person. Well, not, you know, we don't want it to look exactly like the person other than me, but you know, for we want them to look similar.
Yeah,
you know, like that's the style. Like, for example, there's a character called the Commander, you know, who I wanted to be very strong, very like kind of hunky, sort of dashing, you know, guy with a real square jaw. You know, and you know, all that kind of. So I sent him a picture of Dolph Lundgren.
Right, yeah, that's great.
So I sent him a picture of Dolph Lundgren, you know, back in the 80s or whatever, when one of the Rocky movies.
Rocky IV is like, I think, the Russian, the best one.
Yeah.
The fourth one, I think.
I'm embarrassed as a Philadelphian, but I haven't really watched those movies. I'm more into science fiction, fantasy, and stuff like that, so... But so I sent him a picture of that guy, you know, kind of like, okay, make me a character that sort of looks like this.
Yeah.
and is wearing, and he has just to a T has taken every.
I believe his name in the movie was Draco or something like that.
Yeah, that was it.
I will break you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So that was what I wanted the commander to look like.
Yeah.
You know, and he's basically like the ideal of physically all the things I'm not.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm going to absolutely torture this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I am going to run him through a meat grinder.
Yeah.
That's the
commander, you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. An interesting feeling when you know, you make up these characters and stuff, and I don't remember who it was that said it, but a famous writer was like, you know, you have to take your characters and put them through absolute hell. You must, because nobody wants to read a story that goes, the characters showed up, everybody was happy.
Right.
And then everyone went home.
Yeah, everybody has to go through a big time struggle.
Yeah, it's about conflict.
Yeah.
You know, it's about struggle. There's romance, there's betrayal, there's love, there's death, there's hate, there's violence, you know, just
yeah.
Like any great show or movie or, you know, I mean, people like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings or something like that because, you know, you take the characters through absolute misery and then see how they react.
How much do you find as you write this and build out this story and stuff and that you, I mean, all the writing part's done. Yeah, I mean, you've written this a while
back. For the most part, although it's interesting because when I did the rock opera, it's like I basically created the beginning of this fictional universe and the end of this fictional universe and everything in between. But what's interesting is as I do the graphic novel, I now have a chance to change things as I go.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're doing some of that, you're kind of adapting things.
Yeah. It's written, but like just like life, it's not set in stone.
Uh-huh.
You know? There's things that change, there's things that move, there's, you know, variables that you, when you write a story from start to finish, you can't necessarily come up with a lot of stuff. But, you know, what's nice about like having a serial, like, you know, there's the three Lord of the Rings books, then there, you know, The Hobbit and The Silmarillion, yeah, and all that stuff. You know, there's several Game of Thrones books. You know, there's now several Star Wars movies. You know,
yeah,
you get to kind of gauge your audience's reaction to things and then kind of go in those directions based on that. Like, for example, one of my close friends, her name is May. She's you know, kind of like you, just a person that I creatively rely on and I show things to and stuff like that. She's really into one character her name is Celia Proter.
Uh-huh.
And she's the Interstellar Healer's doctor.
Okay.
Much. She's like his, like the person who is in charge of his welfare.
Yeah.
And she's a great character to me, because to me she's the most human out of everybody. But she really kind of glommed onto that character and she wanted to know more about that character. So then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm going to go back and I'm going to flesh out her backstory. And in the next iteration, and, you know, as I write this, I'm going to involve that character more because I've seen that there's been a really good reaction to that character, you know?
Yeah.
So in answer to what you're saying, it is all written, but it's not all finished. You know, it's not
sure,
all
yeah,
set in stone yet.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, when you say things like, you know, you're writing this stuff out, you're, like, developing stuff, and some things are kind of maybe evolving in the moment, as it makes sense to do that in various scenarios and contexts. And then you're saying, like, you know, you're going to run the commander, you're going to run him through everything and just give him hell. How much of – do you find that – there's some kind of congruency between conflict that you're experiencing in your own life and the conflict that you give your characters?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every character is either a piece of me or a piece of someone else. So, you know, like it is all based on stuff that's gone. I mean, absolutely the healer's story. I mean, that's my story, you know, and it's in many ways autobiographical. You know, but the commander, you know, like he represents not only parts of myself, different parts of myself, but also people that I've encountered in the past, you know. You know, so it's almost a way that I can reconcile with those people. Like, you know, the commander is super handsome. He's powerful. He's the second most, like the healer is the most powerful being in the universe and he's miserable.
Yeah.
The commander is the second most powerful being in the universe because he is in charge of the ship that the healer flies on.
Uh-huh.
And he absolutely loves it.
Yeah.
He's famous. He's rich beyond his wildest dreams. He is adored by everyone.
But there's got to be something that he wants for, right? I mean, he wants to be the most powerful or something.
So I have always struggled with seeing, you know, people that are rich and powerful and famous and have everything they want. And even though I know that they're not ultimately necessarily happy, you know, I envy them in that way, you know. So this is like I'm taking that archetype and now I have the power. I have the control and I am going to learn through destroying this character in many ways what I'm going to do to him. It allows me to try to come to terms with that envy and that, you know, that like that desire to be like that, you know, like,
so all these things, there's a piece of like your own autobiography inside of each one of these absolutely. Characters and each conflict that they carry, you know, there's some similarities of, do you find that it's like a way for you to sort of personally cope with and break through, you know, whether it's some sort of conflict or struggle that you may are working to resolve from past era of your life or even something that you're running up against now?
Absolutely. It's therapy, man.
Yeah. It's kind of a form of,
as I, you know, when I write it, it makes this, you know, life make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like writing this story. I can see it happening in front of my eyes. It's my universe that I understand, you know. I like, because this universe is very confusing to me. This world is very confusing to me. And I've never really felt like I fit in it. When I was a child, I was convinced I was an alien. I believed, I actually came up with a story about an alien prince that comes to Earth and doesn't realize that he's an alien, but then meets his royal alien family.
Kind of like Superman.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, there's early stories that I wrote that are definitely ripped from other stories, you know. But I really thought that I was an alien, just, you know, socially. The world has never made much sense to me. And I've always felt like an outsider to it. So this story allows me to take all that and rewrite it, you know, rewrite the universe the way it makes sense to me. While, you know, like symbolically taking ideas, questions about, you know, the question of, is there a God really bugs me daily. So in my universe, I answered that question. Where did Earth come from? Why are we here? What happens when we die? You know, is there life on other planets? Those questions all really bother me, so I answered them in my story, you know.
When you go through that process and there's something that's a personal struggle for you and you figure out a way to encapsulate it in the story, I mean, do you feel a sense of resolve working through things that way?
Definitely, yeah, because, I mean, you know, you wonder, like, man, what would life be like if I knew how things were going to end up, you know, like what would life be like if I could see time cyclically, you know, if rather than time and what's going to happen on this planet and to you or me, rather than those things being complete mysteries, if you knew what was going to happen, you would, you know, that would take a lot of the, that would take all the fun out of life, first of all. But it would also give you some peace because you would know what was going to happen. You know, like if you knew you were going to be run over by a truck in 5 years, it would be a very unsettling piece of information to know. But at least you would know that was going to happen.
Well, I would not to get us off course, but my immediately, this would be an interesting kind of story to explore. I mean, I think people probably have explored this, but if you did, were able to come across that information and you knew that knowledge about yourself, my feeling is that you would then become obsessed with how you can avoid that from happening. Like you would,
right.
You know, even though, and I know that they've made some movies about this where people, you know, they know that they
changing
do everything that
the
they can.
And all that
happens is it just, it doesn't change. It just sort of adulterates the process in some weird way, but it doesn't change the inevitable or something like that. Yeah.
So what I'm talking about. So there's a character in the way backstory of, you know, if this thing floats, then I'll write more about this stuff. But there are these characters that are, they're kind of like angels, but not really. And one of them is a very old guy that has the ability to see time cyclically. So he speaks in present tense because everything is happening at once.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like, rather than like, you know, for me, it's like, I can see how all these things would play out if I knew the answers to them, basically.
Yeah.
And it's fun for me. You know, for one thing, it's fun, but it also gives me an outlet to channel all that energy. Because, I mean, sure. You know, that kind of stuff, you know, it builds up in your brain.
It's a psychological release, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've never really felt very comfortable socially. You know, I mean, it seems like I do a lot of the time, but I'm really not. So this is how I make sense of people, you know, like stuff I see. It's like, you know, there's a little bit of all the people I've met in each of these characters, you know? And so, yeah, it is, it's definitely, you know, it's autobiographical and it's also, it's therapeutic and helps me make sense of the world around me.
Right.
Cause cool. I ultimately, you know, it's the ultimate act of playing God.
Yeah.
You know,
this is my
universe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? But you found that in this process, you've been able to, it's been able to sort of catalyze some kind of like personal breakthroughs for you.
Oh, absolutely. I've learned more about myself and about life and about people doing this.
Yeah. So this is your process. This is kind of your process of like just growing as a person is one of your ways of just kind of growing yourself and evolving as a person. Yeah. Killer, man. So we're about probably wrap it up soon, but there's a few more things that I'm interested in asking you about. As you're creating this and currently, what do you feel is there anything that comes to mind when you think of like your current one or two biggest struggles in the moment right now as you're creating this?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, there's the first thing is, you know, when you, it's almost like you go into this other world. It's like a movie that's playing in front of my eyes. You know, figuring out those kinds of things, answering, you know, questions that I have, like, you know, what's this character do? You got to think of everything, you know? And ultimately also sending that stuff to the artist, you know, Emiliano, sending it to him, and making sure that the details are all in there, you know, but that's fun stuff. The biggest struggle for me right now is, like I said, you know, I was going to try to code this thing myself and I realized there's no way I'm ever going to be able to do it. So I have to hire out a freelancer to do that. So, you know, that stuff, I don't love the negotiation process with those kinds of things. Like, I'd rather just create.
But
it needs to happen. So,
So really, you feel like the struggle there is that you, what I hear you saying in that is that you really dislike the negotiation process. And because you dislike that aspect of having to kind of like handle that business, you try to avoid doing it by taking on that responsibility and doing
it myself.
Yeah.
But man, yesterday I was going through, and I'm like, dude, this might as well be another this is another language that I just, I could spend the next year learning how to do it, but then I'm not spending the next year working on the stuff that I want to do.
You're becoming distracted from, there's a quote that I read just the other day that was like, the main thing is keeping the main thing the main thing.
Right. Yep.
So if you're going doing HTML coding or whatever other coding needs to happen to make this an interactive experience, you're not allowing the main thing to be the main thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was, I mean, I knew that I was never going to be able to do the illustrations because I'm a terrible artist. I'm not good. There's a story that I ate blue paint when I was a kid when I was 2, and my mom got really mad at me and washed my mouth out with soap.
Yeah.
And she still to this day is convinced that that's why I'm a terrible artist, because I refuse to do art at the... Mom, if you're listening, that is not true. I just suck at drawing. You can't be good at everything.
Yeah.
You can't be good at everything. So I knew I was going to have to hire that out. But now, I realized... I can't do it myself. And I recorded a drum track that I'm listening to. And I believe I'm probably just going to have Sean do it.
Yeah.
Because, it's just like, you shouldn't do everything yourself.
Right.
You have to delegate. You know?
Right.
You have to delegate.
Yeah. I think that's where I find, I've in the last handful of years really seen where there are people who bootstrap their way up and become really, really successful versus the people that get stuck in this kind of, they're just stuck in the middle and they're not able to, like, they've got great ideas and they've got, great talents and great core set of skills and stuff, but they're never able to kind of like transcend what they're creating to like a bigger level.
Right.
And when I compare that to people who have been able to do that, and they both started at the same place, where I really see a big difference in the two, those two types of people is that there's one group of people, the first group who really takes their project somewhere and it really transcends to where they kind of reach their goals is they don't try to do all this stuff themselves. They go and delegate stuff. They find ways, whether they're using somehow or another, they're negotiating it, whether they're using money as the tool to do it, whether they're whatever, they figure out a way to do it.
Yep.
Versus the other people who are their default answer is, oh, I'm just going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
And that's what we talked about last time, is having a really great team to work with, where everybody is good at what they do and they do it. So, I've never liked, some people really like the business world and they like negotiating and they like, doing all that stuff. I don't love doing all that stuff. So that's the stuff that's challenging for me.
And I think that it's important to point out that this process for other people to really to think about this. And I think this is the value in having somebody kind of be like a sounding board,
yes,
or somebody that can be sort of an accountability partner that you can meet with all the time to just on an early, like a consistent basis to talk this stuff out with. Because here's the thing, when I'm asking you, what do you think is your biggest challenge? What's your biggest challenge that you're coming up against right now? And your initial response was, well, it's the coding and the HTML and I need to hire that out.
Yeah.
But what's tricky is that's not really what the problem was.
Yeah.
What the true problem is, this is why it's important to have somebody like that can talk this out and say,
yep,
let's try to find what's underneath that. Because what the true problem is that you are averse to, and this is just a notice or realized thing, right? You're averse to wanting to have to handle and negotiate that business. It's an uncomfortable place for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it takes you, and so what happens is you have this is where the war with yourself comes into play. You're now in a battle with yourself and where you're getting in your own way is you're coming up with these BS ways to avoid negotiating and
right.
doing that,
yep.
which is like, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to do this coding myself, or I'm going to play these drums myself, or I'm going to whatever, you know, so you falsely identify the problem as I need to play drums. I need to code or something. I need to like learn that. You falsely identify the problem. The real problem is I don't want to have to step into this like negotiation tactic.
Right.
And so I'm going to come up with ways to avoid that.
Pretty much. Right? Yeah.
So I think that's an important process to go through. And I just wanted to kind of dissect that on the mic, because I think that's a valuable thing, because, you know, and just like
a lot of people deal with that. A lot of
creatives. I was kind of your guy to kind of speak into that for you.
Yes.
I need people like you to speak into it for me, because you kind of, it's very tricky.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see where you're psychologically, it's not obvious to you where you're psychologically tricking yourself in this thing.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's why they've got things like psychotherapy, you know, because, you know, you can't see out of your own, you know, out of your own world. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, your eyes will never look upon your own face.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Unless you look in a mirror.
Yeah.
You know, you will never actually.
And even then, you don't really, because of different weird dysmorphias and different things, you don't actually see.
Right.
You know, so we'll wrap it up. But what do you think in terms of, you know, that challenge that you have? Where, you know, running up against negotiation, and that's a challenge for you. What do you think is the key? How do you think you break through that?
Well, I think that over time I have, you know, rather than I got to think of myself as the executive producer of this. You know, I have to make I can make these decisions, you know. And I want it to be that way, because if I hand it off to somebody else, then I it may be compromised, you know, at least for now. So for me, it's just, you know, I put that war bandana on and I imagine there is an end point to this, you know, this thing will be done eventually. And then when it's done, then there's a whole new war that starts, which is the war of getting it out there.
Yeah.
For me, the way I hack my brain is I imagine the alternative. The alternative is that my life stays the way it is. And that, it's not that my life is horrible, don't get me wrong, but it's not the life I want.
You know, yeah, the life you feel I'm living, like there's some sort of gap in like what you believe is like the actualization of what you want versus where you are now. There's like a gap there.
Right.
Okay, what do you think's in the gap? What is that?
Well, you know, like so like there's the life I'm living now, which I wake up every day, the motivation to do everything is that this life is going to change. You know, that I'm going to be able to change my life into something new. All the stuff in the middle is me making the decisions, you know, crafting this, you know, building my castle, fighting this war, you know, to get to that eventual end point. And that's literally the only thing that I can do to force myself to do those things is just imagine this is it. This is what the rest of your life is going to look like. Just living in this apartment, you know, working this job, you know, doing this, this is your life for the rest of your life, unless you do this.
Yeah.
If you don't do this, you know, you're like, I use an analogy with my students, you know, imagine yourself in 30 years sitting on a chair, watching football with, you know, with Cheeto dust all over your hands. Cause you've been, you know, you're just, and looking back and saying, I wish I would have done dot dot dot.
Yeah.
Now if that's the life you want, there is absolutely nothing wrong with
right.
it. There's I'm not disparaging anybody who wants to do that. I don't want to do that.
Right. You've made an agreement with yourself to be this artistic creator that creates right. things that aren't in a vacuum, that connects out there with the
yes.
world and that people get inspired by.
Exactly.
You've made an agreement with yourself to do that.
Yep.
And currently, you know, you have yet to achieve that on the level that you want to.
Right.
Right. And so that's what's kind of in the gap. Yep. Right. Yeah. There's nothing that it's not like, you know, your life is terrible.
No,
and that, like,
no,
you
not
know,
at all.
You know, you're just depressed because like whatever. It's just that you haven't fulfilled your agreement with yourself.
Right. I mean, ultimately I want to portray this character on stage. I want to wear the costume. I want to sing the songs.
But not only that, but you want it to connect with people in a real fundamental way.
I
want to inspire them.
Yeah, I want to create something. You know, a lot of my music in the past has been, there's people that like it, and then there's everyone else who it just doesn't click with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say, oh, well, that's because you people are idiots. You're morons that don't understand anything. That was when I was much younger. Now I realize, you know, if it's not connecting with them, it's because you're not connecting with them, you know? So this is my hope. My hope is to create something now that people can connect with,
mm-hmm.
that they can, you know, see in themselves simultaneously the healer, the commander, Celia, Dr. Proter, and Michaela. I want for all four of those characters and everybody else to be people that they can see little bits of themselves in. And to do that, you know, much of the work is in creating and you know, designing and all that stuff. But also much of the work is this above the shoulders mustard shit that I have to do. You know, it's just, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, maintaining, building, and cleaning. They're not, there's a Rick and Morty episode where there's a therapist that talks about this. There's no way to do those things so wrong you might die, you know?
Uh-huh.
So they're boring to me. And they're scary because I have to deal with people, and people are unpredictable. People are, you know, they do things that you know, you can't control in a vacuum like I've created in the story. I have to deal with actual people, and I have to, you know, I'm impatient, so I can't. It's hard for me to wait for answers and wait for stuff. You know, I mean, Emiliano's working on the pages, you know, and like I asked him for an update a couple of days ago, you know, after 2 weeks. I want to ask him for an update every 6 minutes.
Yeah, right.
So like those kinds of things are frustrating to me, but not only do they advance the project, they also advance me as a person. So I grow.
Yeah.
As I learn to do these things.
Yeah.
And so I just, that's what I tell myself. I'm like, you got to do this, man, or this project is going down and no one will ever hear it.
Yeah.
So it's just thinking of the alternative is what,
and that's,
is what
that's
I
been,
do.
That, yeah, that's been really helpful. It's been really working for you. Cool, man. Yep. Awesome, dude. As we wrap it up, I would want to ask this, and this kind of be the last thing, then we can, I'll let you get on with your day. But, who is this project for? You know, at the end of it, who's this project for in terms of, you know, obviously it's like it's for you and you're fulfilling a lot of things in yourself by doing this. But, you know, in terms of like an audience, like what kind of music fan or comic fan or story, movie, book type of audience are you really creating this for?
Well, that's a great question. Obviously, you know, I'm definitely creating it for people who like science fiction. I'm, you know, people who like fantasy, people who like comic books, superheroes. Definitely, I'm kind of trying to create a new type of superhero that doesn't actually fight anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but and people, yeah, you know, people who like progressive rock, people who like classic rock, people who really don't like the music of today that want something else, you know. Bring me your tired, your poor, your, you know, heavy laden, whatever. Come to me and I will provide the. But okay, so there's that. But then I also want to create something that, you know, like my mom would listen to, that my mom would enjoy.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, your average regular. Not, I shouldn't say it that. That's not the way I mean to say it. You know, somebody who doesn't like those things that I mentioned before, I hope will, maybe if they don't love the story or the music, maybe if they don't love the graphic novel, But I hope that they like that they can find something in the story that speaks to the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
I guess really, I know this sounds crazy, but I want to create a story for everyone,
mm-hmm.
for us, all of us. And it sounds like there's a lot of hubris in that, like, you know, what you know. But ultimately, that's what I hope to do. I hope to, you know, there's stories that have captured us, you know, Star Wars, you know, I don't know, I guess Lord of the Rings, you know, or even, you know, the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible, you know,
sure.
even. I mean, I'm not going to get into the religious stuff, like whether it's true or not. I'm not going to get into it, but they're amazing stories.
Sure.
Fantastic stories. And they have shaped the psyche and the culture of humanity. And I want to tap into that. So that, you know, like I said, we can see a little bit of ourselves in each of these characters.
Killer man.
You know?
We're right on.
So yeah, that's what I hope to do.
Killer man. Awesome, dude. Well, yeah, man. So we'll wrap it there. And
perfect.
That's a good, solid conversation.
Yeah, man.
I really enjoyed it. And
we're
I
getting
think
better that, at this.
Yeah, we are, man. So yeah, it's good. I appreciate you coming on. Want to be, you know, establishing regulars on the show and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I'm honored, man. I
people
really appreciate
that,
you having me.
I know I have good, high quality conversations with, and it's just kind of an iron sharpens iron kind of thing.
Yes.
So awesome, man. More in the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Man. All right.
Cool, man.
Cheers.
Thank you, bud.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Modern Recordist. To follow up with Tim and all that he is up to with his graphic novel, head over to theinnerstellarhealer.card.co. That's a lot. That's a lot to type out. Very confusing, but Interstellar Healer, INTERSTELLAR, in case you didn't know how to spell interstellar. And card happens to be spelled CARRD, getting, you know, how they get creative with technical services and things like that. So it's theinnerstellarhealer.card.co. We'll have that linked up in the show notes as well, because that's quite a lot to remember and figure out how to do, spelling it out on your computer and such. And to keep in touch with Tim's band Zaz, head over to zazmusic.bandcamp.com. And that's another big one. And you spell Zaz, Z-A-S-Z. So zazmusic.bandcamp.com. We'll have that linked up in the show notes as well. And in the future, I'm really going to get on Tim about coming up with some sort of URL that's more user-friendly. So in the meantime, look for the links in the show notes, and that'll get you linked over to all that stuff. But you can sign up for the email list for the graphic novel and keep up on all the latest and greatest there and everything that Tim is going to be putting out, announcements on releases and possible live events and things like this. So go over there and get on the email list, and you can check out Zaz Music and his Bandcamp site. Listen to the releases and some of the stuff that I've helped him produce and projects that I've worked with him on in the past in the studio. Also, make sure you get subscribed and stay subscribed to The Modern Recordist. And the way you do that is to fire up iTunes or Stitcher, search for The Modern Recordist, and click or tap on the subscribe button that you will find there. While there, take literally just a quick second to leave a rating and review. Good and honest ratings and reviews clue others into the value that you are getting out of listening to this podcast. And it helps communicate the value to potential guests and why it's worth their time to be on the show. And it also helps us to gauge whether or not we're producing content that you find particularly insightful and that you are finding the guests interesting and insightful and fun to listen to. So fire up your podcast app of choice, search for The Modern Recordist, click or tap the subscribe button, and leave a rating and review. Okay, I am now going to return to the proverbial battle with myself and go hit the mat for another night of jiu-jitsu. That's it for this week. There's more for you next week. And in the meantime, go live your life of an extraordinary artistic visionary and create music that impacts the world.